Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code PLAY100. That's code PLAY100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast back for another week. My name is Jack Collins, and joining me today is Mr. Sam Tai, the Rank God.
Hello, my friend.
Hello, mate. And of course, our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Hello, mate.
Hey, mate. It's your last pod for a little while, Dean. We're going to be missing you. You're going on holidays.
A couple of months. Yeah. I'll see you Christmas time.
I'm going to see you for a while. Just back for the Christmas special, eh?
Back for Christmas special. Yeah. Going to go to California. I told you it was 2 weeks. It's 2 months.
Yeah, it's been a scary moment. We would drop that on us right now, so we'll deal with that. We've got some substitutes coming in while you're away, Dean. We've got some very special guests to bring to the Rank Squad to step in your hallowed spot, really, to take on what is an incredible job you do. So we've got some big names coming in. We're very excited about it, but we do hope that you have a wonderful time away.
Well, I'll try and listen in and see who it was, because I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
You don't know.
We were plotting yesterday, weren't we, Jack?
Yeah. Well, we hope that Dean's going to go and see some of the Rank Squad when he's in America. If they come to him, I don't expect him to travel.
I'm not going to go looking for them, but a few people have messaged, a couple offering to take me out for pizza. Couple saying they might be at that LAFC game I'm going to next week. So, there's a good chance, I'm sure.
Absolutely. You can get our new stickers and help them. They can help you give them out.
I'm going to take stickers, aren't I, and stick them around LA. Presume I'll just wear this Rank Squad shirt every day as well. Just promote it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're looking forward to this new guerrilla marketing drive from Dean Jones in LA. Today's main ranking, Sam, is a little bit off-piste. I'm really excited about it, actually. But it's about players who we didn't maybe foresee having such a major role, who we now think might have big, big parts to play in their respective club seasons this year.
Yeah, not talking about transfer signings here. I think we're talking about like actual like player turnarounds, like remontadas, if you will. Players who have been on the books at these clubs for a while, maybe loaned out or something like that, or seemed like they were on the periphery of the manager's thoughts. And all of a sudden, you know, they're starting, they're playing very well. They've become quite important. And we think this will probably carry on as well. So I've picked out five players from a shortlist again of about 10, wasn't it? We had a little look yesterday. Hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Can't wait to hear you talking about John Michael Seri, to be perfectly honest with
nope.
you.
That's where I'm
excited to hear. And right, before we get on to that, it's time for Things We Love. And Sam, you could start us off.
Okay, so just one player of Barcelona affiliation had a good night on Monday as they drew 1-1 with the mighty Granada, and that is Ronald Araujo. And not only did he score the equalising goal in stoppage time, which rescued a point for Barca, but he'd been like quite clearly the very best player on the pitch by a distance throughout the game. He actually ended up having five shots. He's a centre back. Five shots on goal. The last one went in. The one he had just before half time forced an unreal save from Luis Maximiano. And he defended superbly as well. He's got like this combination of size and speed and technique that allows him to dominate in 1v1 situations, dominate 1v1 tackling, very good recovery, can play a nice high line. He's excellent. He really is excellent. In fact, we got to the point last night where it became very clear that he is by far Barcelona's best centre-back. Like,
oh yeah,
by an absolute distance. And it's starting to make the others look a little bit bad because he's 22. He's in his second season of senior European first team football. And he's still got loads of room to grow and loads of improving to do of his own. And he's already so much better than the others. Now, look, as a Granada fan, it hurts when someone like that scores a last-minute goal against you and takes 3 points away from you. I'm not going to lie, that hurts. But I felt a little bit like that scene in Anchorman when Ron Burgundy comes home and his dog, Baxter, has eaten an entire wheel of cheese. And he just goes, I'm not even mad. That's amazing. And that's kind of how I felt about Big Ronald here, because I think he's awesome and I love him. And he played so well as well. I was just like, oh, if anyone was going to score it. And it did feel like it was coming. It might as well have been Araujo, but I think he is unreal. I couldn't even find it within me to be mad that he'd scored that goal that stopped us from getting 3 points. And look, partially, bit of a saving grace for Barcelona because they were shambolic on Monday night.
Yeah, it doesn't look great from a Barcelona perspective. And he was, as you say, the only real bright spark from quite a dark evening. There was a couple of young players playing. I suppose it was a relatively young back line across the whole thing. We saw, obviously, some of the exciting youngsters in the middle. Obviously, Gavi came on. We saw Ricky Puig get his first minutes in a Barcelona shirt this year. But these were all kind of small victories in quite a dark evening. And Araujo was basically the only one who really stood up and was like, this is, he was the best player on the park, as you say, would have been man of the match even if Barcelona had lost 1-0. And then that's a bizarre thing to say for a centre back. There was a moment where in, you know, chasing the winner after he'd scored, he went steaming down the right wing, you know, knocked it round a defender, absolutely like flung himself after it and threw in probably the best of the 54 crosses that Barcelona chucked into the box that day. And it took an excellent intervention to stop Gerard Piqué somehow scoring a winner, which would have been brutally undeserved, frankly, and would have been very, very harsh on Granada, who were relatively solid, if slightly uninspiring, over the course of the whole game. So, I mean, I suppose where it leaves us as a discussion is, you know, how do you solve a problem like Barcelona? And there's been reports this morning, Dean, that Ronald Koeman is on his way out, or at least it looks like the Barcelona board, according to these reports, have decided that, you know, whenever it comes, a change is going to be made.
Yeah, seems the case. Yeah, as we recorded this on Tuesday morning, it's started to leak that Barca have decided they need a new boss, and it's going to be a case of days or weeks before they determine who is going to be the guy that can replace him. Which is weird if you're Koeman to be hearing that today. But it's part and parcel of being a football manager and failing to achieve what you should be achieving with a squad and a club that size. I don't think it's a great surprise. I think Koeman's had this coming for quite a long time. But replacing him, that doesn't mean it's easy. Just because he hasn't done a great job there doesn't mean it's easy to replace him. So, you know, there's a long list of names that are being touted as potentials to come in for him, from Andre Pirlo to Xavi to
Philippe Cocu
to Roberto Martinez, Mikel Arteta. And you've got a candidate you like yourself, don't you, that we've been speaking about this morning separately, actually, from this.
Yeah, we've done a whole YouTube video on who should maybe be the next Barcelona boss if they are going to make this change. We're going to discuss all of this basically in more depth there. So it's on our YouTube channel. If you want to go and check that out and see the deep dive on what's going wrong at Barcelona. And I think maybe the top line is that it's not all Koeman's fault, but he's basically not doing anything to help himself at the same time. And yeah, I think maybe what's made a lot of people angry is the refusal to take any blame upon himself and the continued press quotes that are like, what do you expect us to do? Play tiki-taka? Well, yeah. Yeah, I think that is what people expect you to do, mate. Like, that is exactly what people are looking for. And, you know, Laporta has come in here and he's overseen an incredibly difficult summer. And don't get me wrong, I think his plenty of blame can be partitioned to Joan Laporta after what's happened this summer. Plenty of blame can be, you know, also partitioned to his predecessor, Bartomeu, who has put the club in such a diabolical financial situation that they are basically physically unable to do things. But then Ronald Koeman is like, oh, what I want to do is stick Pique and Luke de Jong up front and swing 55 crosses in against Granada. It's just not really the vibe that I think anybody is looking for. And therefore, you can see why Barcelona might look to enact such a change. But it does make it kind of hard because, Sam, it feels probably like the most poisoned chalice in football right now.
I wouldn't go near it, me personally.
You would. If they offered you the job tomorrow, you'd take it.
I don't know. I like my current football club. Thank you very much. Ranks FC is the one for me. They're in disarray. The post-Messi year, the one after Messi, is obviously going to be really, really difficult for a lot of different reasons. And it kind of feels like almost like they remember that post-Wenger year where they were going to have to take a full guy or something, or someone was going to have to step in and be the guy that kind of just like fails. Ultimately, that you're just going to fail, aren't you? It's not going to work. But the squad depth isn't there. Loads of players are injured. Ansu Fati needs to be eased back. There's crippling debt. There's expectation in the stands. Yes, they're supposed to have measured it and sort of like tempered those expectations a little bit. But have they? Like, it's Barcelona. Like, yes, they might have done a little bit, but nowhere near enough considering where they are. And that's okay. As a fan, like of Barcelona, you're entitled to expect. But whoever steps into this is going to get, I think they're going to get crushed by just all different things flying off the cliff. So I'm not interested in the job, just to be very clear.
Okay, we'll pass that message on to Jean Laporta to make
did
sure
he
doesn't include you. Yeah, a little bit. It was a small, I think it was more of a kind of seeing if there was any interest rather than, it was just sounding out.
I'm not surprised, but I'm not interested.
Well, we broke down some of the candidates and where they stand in our mini rankings, shall we say, of how they might fare at Barcelona. And the obvious answer is none of them are going to do particularly well given the situation. But it's over on YouTube. Go and check out our YouTube channel, Ranks FC, on there. There's all the bits and bobs about Barcelona. And with that, Dean, we'll move to your thing we love.
So I went to Fulham at the weekend and there wasn't much to love, to be honest.
No.
But there was one thing. I got to see Danny Drinkwater play football. And that's a rarity. Yeah, yeah. Like a rare sighting of Danny Drinkwater. And there he was on a football pitch playing in an actual football match. Crazy, really. And something I definitely didn't expect to see that day. I thought I was going to see a straightforward Fulham win. And no, I see a Fulham defeat and Danny Drinkwater. So there you go. Quite nice to see him. He came on unexpectedly as an early sub because
quite one of the players early, yeah.
Yeah, came on after 20 minutes. Now, obviously, look, just to refresh everyone's memories on who Danny Drinkwater is, he's a Premier League champion. He won the league with Leicester and then he joined Chelsea in September 2017 for £35 million. At the time, he'd obviously had a fantastic season with Leicester. All of their players were being touted for moves at the time. And it hasn't worked out. I mean, he played 23 times for Chelsea. He hasn't actually played for them since 2018. And he's obviously had a few loan spells since then, and well, it hasn't gone well for him. I mean, the main reasons he's been in the headlines are that when he was at Burnley, he headbutted someone in a bar, and when he was at Aston Villa, he headbutted one of his teammates. Like, that's been about the extent of what we've seen from him. But do you know what? He played quite well. He played quite well. And it was obviously, like, I wasn't super pumped to see Danny Drinkwater having a good game against a Fulham team that was struggling to break Reading down. But yeah, I mean, he kept it simple for sure, but you could see that class and that quality in there. And, you know, like, you do want to see people bounce back. And he's obviously had a really tough time. He's given an interview actually since, and he's asked about, like, can you paint a picture of what it's been like? And he said, no, it's been a shambles.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I just need to get things back on track now. I'm in the last year of my contract. There's a lot riding on this year. Just got to hope things work out for me. And yeah, it is a big year. And I hope it does go well for him. I really do, because we know what a brilliant footballer he was as at Leicester. And, you know, the type of how influential he was in that title win. And I'd love to see him bounce back from it. So yeah, a bad day for me watching Fulham, but very nice to see Danny Drinkwater back in action.
Yeah, that interview he gave with the Telegraph was incredibly heartfelt, wasn't it? It was a real kind of, oh, okay, things are really tough and things have been really tough. And, it wasn't nice to read.
No, because you imagine that footballers, you know, they get paid a lot of money, and you think no matter what they're going through, it'll be okay because they've got loads of money in their bank account. But not the case, is it? You know, a lot of people have all sorts of issues no matter what their bank account says. And I hope he's back to his best soon.
Yeah, I mean, good luck to him, as long as it's not against Fulham next time.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't play next time.
I'm absolutely fine with that. Yeah. Right, I'll take us on to our last thing we love, which is going to be Napoli, who are now the last perfect team in Serie A after the weekend, where Roma fell to defeat Hellas Verona and Milan drew with Juventus. Napoli won 4-0 last night, and while most people in the world were watching Barcelona against Granada, I was decided to dual screen these. And I watched Napoli absolutely take Udinese to the cleaners. Now, Udinese had an excellent start themselves. They drew with Juventus in the first week. Then they beat Venezia. Then they beat Spezia. And then they came up against Napoli, knowing that a win would actually send Udinese top of the table, which would have been a bianconero on top of Serie A that perhaps a lot of people weren't expecting in week four. But Napoli swept them aside with, you know, relative ease, frankly. And the pick of the goals was the most delightful set piece routine. Oh, straight off the training ground, Insigne drops it short. It goes in behind to be headed across. And then Ramani heads it home. And it is just one of the best things I've seen in ages, a perfectly executed off the training ground set piece routine, which was, you know, really, really enjoyable. And Napoli look like a lot of fun. A couple of weeks ago, we did our 5x5s, and Napoli was sort of here and there in there. And I think a lot of people were not particularly convinced with the summer. You know, it was a relatively easy start. The win over Juventus was a big win, obviously. But you look at that game and you look at how it transpired and how it played out, and it wasn't comfortable winning. It wasn't suddenly like Napoli were like, everybody's the business and we're fine. They signed Andre Frank Zambo and Guisa on the last day of the transfer window, which felt like a big move, and it feels like it adds a real steel to that midfield. It adds some real carrying ability. I don't think I've seen many players ever in the flesh who can carry the ball as well as Anguissa can when he's on it. And I think that he's going to tear Serie A apart. But I was a little bit underwhelmed with the window. I was a little bit underwhelmed with Spalletti, to be honest. But I was thinking about it last night, and I decided that in a season where there is so much transition going on, there is so much ebb and flow in all of the contending teams. We're seeing the return of Allegri at Juventus, but also the fact that they're coming to terms with a new era without Cristiano Ronaldo. We're seeing a Jose Mourinho era at Roma, which I think is going to be successful, but obviously has the potential to be incredibly volatile. We're seeing Inter looking very, very good, but also who have lost Lukaku, who have lost Conte, who have lost Hakimi. We're looking at Milan side with, you know, a strike force with a combined age of 80 million. And I think with all of these things in place,
there's a lot going on in Serie A to look at it and think, okay, this is new. And maybe just an experienced head at the helm and a very settled squad is something that will play really heavily into Napoli's hands. And if they play like they did last night, then nobody is going to want to play them. And it's exciting times at the Diego Armando Maradona. So, Napoli, very much worth keeping an eye on. They look like a lot of fun. They fought back in the Europa League midweek against Leicester to draw 2-2. And they've just had a very good start to the season. And they're really enjoyable to watch. So in a game where, you know, we were seeing the battle of attrition between Barcelona and Granada on one screen, Napoli's free-flowing style, where they just basically scored at will, was a lovely antidote on the other. So shouts out to Napoli. They're my thing I love this weekend. Right, yeah. After the break, we are going to be doing our main ranking. And Sam's going to be looking at players who are surprise packages to have a big season this year. Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time for our big ranking. Sam, floor is yours.
Sure. Okay. So surprise players set for big seasons. And the way I have ranked them is, depending on how surprised I think I would have been by this development had I taken a time machine and told myself about it back in June. So go back in time, Sam, June version of Sam. This player is playing an absolutely massive role for this club. Then look at my face. How shocked am I? 1 to 10. Rank them. That's the exact science that has gone into the order of these players. You like it?
Excellent. I like it a lot. I'm excited. I want you to give me that out of 10 ranking as well for every player as to how shocked you'd be, and potentially also like the face so I can see it.
I won't give you the face, but I can give you a rating for sure. I mean, we're going to start high because these are all very surprising. That's the whole point of it, right? And at number 5, I'm going to take Sandro Tonali, central midfielder for AC Milan. This is about a 7 out of 10 on the shock scale. No doubt about it, for me, Tonali's playing the best football of his entire life. And watching him at the moment is a genuinely like satisfying experience. And I think I've been thinking about why that is, and I've boiled it down to, I think for the first time since signing for Milan, he looks comfortable in his own skin. Like, I felt a bit sorry for him last year. Big expectation, big potential, bright spotlight. Milan were going places. Tonali was a Milan boy. He chose Milan over a couple of other destinations, and it was, you know, revered as a homecoming transfer, one that we loved. And it didn't really go to plan early on. He sort of played, I think he played within himself. I think he was quite nervous. I don't think he ever looked particularly relaxed. And most of his Milan performances last season, I mean, correct if I'm wrong, guys, but they're pretty underwhelming. He just wasn't that good. And I don't think there was a lot of faith in him from the management either. And I think that was probably a factor in them going out in January and going and signing Mate on loan, you know, just to cover for the competitions they had, because I'm not 100% sure that they were looking at Tonali as a man who they felt that they could rely on.
It was a funny one, wasn't it? And we spoke about it a little bit earlier in the season, in that Milan fans were so desperate for him to succeed that every time he did something good, the hyperbole went through the roof. Yeah. It was like, oh, Tonali's been the player of the, you know, he's been the best player on the pitch today. And no, he hasn't. He's, you know, he's still getting to terms with, yes, he's doing some good things. He's also still doing some bad things. And that kind of desire to watch a player succeed, especially one who supports the club, right? And has openly talked about how he's now playing for the club he loved growing up. And all of those things as a fan make you want him to succeed more and more and more. But it also meant that it was really hard to get an actual gauge on how Tonali was doing, because everything he did that was good got blown through the absolute ceiling, and everything that he did that was bad got kind of brushed under the carpet. And therefore, it was a bit of an odd dichotomy. But this season, it just feels like he's so much more comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. And I genuinely believe this has kind of come from, well, I don't say nowhere, but I there were no clues to this. Like, even going into the summer, the under 21 Euros, he was dreadful at the under 21 Euros. Like, he was the big name in a big team. It's Italy. The opponents knew it. They double marked him. They pressed him. They wound him up. He ended up getting red carded in the group stage after a terrible performance where he was clearly very frustrated with himself. Again, battling against that, maybe his own expectation of himself, maybe expectations from others, or whatever it is. It wasn't all clear and conscious in his mind. And I provide all that context because the leap he has made early this season has been amazing. And I can honestly barely believe it. Now, I've put this 5th because Tonali's a player. We all know that. Like, we know that he was going to figure it out eventually. But there were no clues that he would be like, bang, start of the season, we're good. He's pushed Bennacer out the team. Bennacer is excellent. And now Pioli goes...
He was probably Milan's best player last year.
And now Pioli goes to Kessié and Tonali as the first choice central midfield pairing, not Kessié and Bennacer in the pivot, which is a huge compliment to Tonali. And you watch him play and he's now playing with a real intensity. He's playing with a real authority. He's confident. He's comfortable. You watch him, you know, dominating midfield alongside Bennacer and Kessié in Turin at the weekend, you know, away to Juventus. And he looks totally, totally at home. He's retaining the ball under pressure. He's playing smart passes. He's playing smart passes now where last year he'd give the ball away. That's the major difference.
I think that happened quite a lot at 21. I remember Gary Neville talking about Cristiano Ronaldo and how, you know, they've been just gone through a season and Ronaldo, you could see how good he was. But Gary Neville said, I was genuinely fed up of playing with him. Like, he just didn't listen. He was constantly trying things that weren't working. It was just frustrating to play alongside him. And then suddenly you appeared in the dressing room with him after a summer and he felt like a completely different person because he'd matured. And it often is at 21 that players come back from a summer break and into a new season and they seem like that new person and they have that extra maturity and they've had time to reflect on a big season because, you know, around that kind of 19-20, it's a big breakthrough and you've got a lot to deal with in terms of expectation, but also becoming a man. And I think that Tonali has had to come through that. And, you know, in that Juve game, he's up against Locatelli, who's a couple of years older than him. But Locatelli, you know, he had a lot of hype around him too. People probably consider him to be further along than Tonali. Mature-wise.
Plus there's the whole he got let go by Milan thing, right? There's that narrative to add into the situation.
And Tonali won the battle, right? So, you know, it's a big moment for him in that sense. And I think it's a big season and one in which, we're surprised right now because we didn't quite see it coming. But this is what great players do, that they go through tough moments, but they come through them fine because they've always have complete belief in their ability and their way of playing football.
Which is why I assume you have him at five, Sam, right? Because there was always this potential to explode. The reason he's in this list at all is because it didn't feel like it was going to happen just so soon. And I think your Bennacer point is maybe the key here, right? To knock Bennacer out of the side, given how good he was last year, given how important he was to Milan last year, is a real statement.
Yeah, the correlation was when Bennacer plays, Milan win. And when he dipped out from due to injury early this year, so January, February-ish, they really struggled to get some results without Bennacer. I don't think he was there, because over the course of the context of the whole season, he wasn't their best player. Like, it was going to be someone like Kessié or even Donnarumma or Kjaer. But yeah, I mean, they didn't tend to get results without Bennacer. They really struggled to do so. And now, well, they're unbeaten and they've got three wins and a draw, the draw coming away to Juventus. And Bennacer has not really been a part of the team. So well done to Tonali.
Excellent. Okay, let's go on to number four, shall we?
Right, number four is an old friend of ours. It is Philippe Coutinho, who I was politely reminded last night, Monday night, exists. He was named in the Barcelona starting 11 against Granada. And my reaction was, Coutinho, I remember him. So first of all, that's tragic, isn't it? That is just tragic. You know, yeah. Coutinho, 29
not
years
as tragic
of age,
as that penalty he tried to win.
Yeah, right. We don't talk about that. But he's 29, right? And it's not that long ago that he was at his absolute peak, maybe 3 years ago. And at his absolute peak, Coutinho was basically an elite footballer or a fringe elite level footballer. And I know he's been injured. And I know Barca's been a total disaster for him. But for me to actually just forget about him is really bad. It's really, really bad. And I'm sure that Barca fans are like, well, we didn't forget about him because he's mentioned in reports every day about trying to shift him and sell him and injuries and all that. But the lay fan, the neutral that doesn't follow Barca every day, a lot of us really did forget that Coutinho is around. And that's why he's in this list, because yes, we know what he's capable of, but did we expect Coutinho to be stepping into a potentially pivotal role for this season back in maybe June or July, as I visit my previous self? Hell no. But in the time between those two dates, I mean, Messi's gone. Griezmann's gone. Fati is being eased back. Dembele got an injury at the Euros that keeps him out for 4 months. Demir is 18. Gavi 17. Sorry, but this is the way they're going to have to go. They're going to have to look to Coutinho this season. And he's just played 60 minutes on his return. He wasn't great, let's be honest, but he hadn't played for absolutely ages. And then the last couple of games Barca have played, they've really lacked an ability to create incisive chances, a bit of cutting edge in midfield. If they're signing up for 54 crosses a game, fine, but that's obviously not what they want to do. And Coutinho then suddenly steps in as like, well, hang on a minute. He could actually be like a relatively pivotal player here, partly because there are no other options, but partly because you've given that opportunity because you know what he could be. And what's been the issue in the past for him? It doesn't feel like he's really ever fit with Messi or with Griezmann or whatever. They're all gone. This is carte blanche for Coutinho, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm very intrigued.
I think it's important to remember that he started out quite well at Barcelona.
Yeah,
in the first half season, he got 10 goals in 22 appearances. The next year, he got 11. He made 54 appearances across all comps. It's not bad. They won the title. You know, and then he obviously went out on loan to Bayern Munich, where he got 11 in 38. Like, this record is decent. Even, you know, in these last years where he hasn't really existed, as you say, you know, the record up to 2020, where he was on loan, obviously, at Bayern, is fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that record. And it's a far better record than I think people give it credit for. You know, there's a lot of time that you say, saying, oh, Coutinho's Barcelona career has been a flop. And I think you'd have to suggest that. I think you have to say that it hasn't gone to plan. It hasn't worked out in the way that anybody dreamed that it might. But also, when you actually look at his record up to last year, where it all really did sort of, he did actually get closed out and there was very, very little to write home about. I think he played 14 times across all competitions last season, which is frankly not enough. But on the whole, you actually look at his Barcelona career and go, okay, yes, it hasn't gone to the quite extreme that you wanted it to. And yes, it hasn't. He hasn't fit with the team. He hasn't worked. It hasn't gelled with the system, et cetera, et cetera. But the numbers are okay. And now if he has that opportunity, as you say, where there is this kind of blank slate, that there isn't too much going on. The only big, huge character here is Memphis now. The last big character there in terms of playing an attacking role and wanting to do what he wants to do is Memphis. If Coutinho can get in there and make something happen with Memphis, and especially, you know, we spoke at the start of this episode, obviously, about the fact that there might be new management, there might be a new course being plotted here for Barcelona in the very near future. Can he work his way into those plans? Because they're going to need people to rely on. And we talk a lot about the fact that this is a Barcelona side that needs to lean on its youth crop, right? It needs to lean on the likes of Araujo. It needs to lean on the likes of Dest and Pedri and Frankie de Jong, even, obviously a little bit older than the rest of these guys, but, you know, still very much in there. Gavi, Ricky Puig, Demir, even Callado, who I do still think might get a look in if new management comes through. And then suddenly you're like, okay, you do need some experienced heads in here as well. And Coutinho is now an experienced head at this level. He's someone who you think, okay, you need to give him, you know, the space to create and thrive, sure. But also you can rely on him to, you know, be there when that comes up. And I do think that we might see a really interesting year for Philippe Coutinho. Now, whether it goes down as success or not is a bit of a different question, because how do you define success for Barcelona in this campaign? I think it's something that everybody's still trying to work out. But if Coutinho can get in there and be a key man as they just steady the ship, I think his reputation will go back through, you know, back up to at least an even keel from a negative one.
Yeah, I agree. And it will be very, very hard to ascertain exactly what is a success. But it's not, as you say, his numbers have been relatively consistent throughout. And I think once he finds a little bit of sharpness, I think all he needs is a little run of games. And he'll probably just remind us that actually, we used to call him the magician here, didn't we? And that there's a reason for that. At 29, he's certainly not washed, and having missed a bit of time as well, there might be quite a lot left in those legs. And you talk about all those young players, and it is just so important to supplement those with experience and with guys who have been around and have played properly. Because as enthralling and as enticing as it is to throw Gavi in there from the start and have him play every game, look, we all want to see that, but at the end of the day, actually, that's probably not the best thing to do, is it?
No, it's almost certainly not. You do need to kind of just temper it, as we say. Yeah. We use the word temper a lot today, but temper that kind of youthful exuberance with a little bit of experience just to guide them through. And that's what, well, it's part of why it's such a big challenge to manage Barcelona right now. Yeah. Which takes us on to number three, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, so Coutinho was an 8 on the shock factor scale, by the way. And this next one in at number three was an 8.5. Shane Duffy, centre back for Brighton and Hove Albion. I think we'd all assumed that Brighton had outgrown Shane Duffy, hadn't we? By the summer of 2020 or something like that, he'd obviously been a key man for Chris Hughton in a different style of play. Then his playing time dips really sharply under Graham Potter. And then he gets loaned to Celtic because Adam Webster, Ben White, too good too often. And Lewis Dunk is the captain of the football club. And I mean, when you get loaned to Celtic in 2020 as well, in their actual down year, that should have been it, I think. That felt like curtains. And Jack, I guess I need to throw to you and ask about the loan, because I don't think he was even that good on loan at Celtic, was he?
I was going to say, I don't think suggesting that a loan to Celtic is the end of your career is a fair point. However, Shane Duffy's loan to Celtic was a disaster from like day one. Everyone was really excited as well. I remember the general demeanor, the general kind of feeling around it was, this is good. This is the Ireland captain coming in to play for Celtic. That's good. You know, there's a kind of synergy there that all makes sense. You know, Celtic were light at the back and needed help. And Duffy, whilst not the best ball player in the world, hence wasn't able to, you know, really fit in early doors with that Graham Potter system, was a strong, athletic, set-piece threat who is able to command a back line and justify, I think, selection, you know, even ahead of technically slightly more gifted players, by leadership, by the ability to win challenges, by heart and soul in some ways. And it felt a little bit like that's what Celtic were lacking, to be honest, right? They were lacking a little bit of that. Instead, it just went from bad to worse. Like, it just kept getting worse. And there were some awful performances in Old Firms. You know, there's a lot of Rangers fans that tell you that Shane Duffy won them the title. That's not a good thing for an Ireland captain walking into Celtic to be achieving, right? And I think that when you put all that in context and you look at the end of it, and look, I remember watching Shane Duffy playing for Ireland last year and being like, come on, man, you can't even get in the Celtic team. We can't be playing Shane Duffy. He's been awful. But actually, he also has always just turned up for Ireland, and he's always been a part of that system. He always feels like he puts it on the line. There are certain players who just seem to play better for Ireland than they ever will for their clubs. James McLean, Shane Duffy. But it does come to that point where you go, there was no way back for Shane Duffy in my head at Brighton. The game was gone. It was over. Mm. It was a question of which championship club are Brighton going to sell Shane Duffy to? That's where I was at.
Yep. That's where I was too. Dean, before I continue, just a quick barometer from you. Did you expect me to go from Sandro Tonali to Philippe Coutinho to Shane Duffy?
No, didn't see it coming, mate. Didn't see it coming. But
we keep you on
it's
your
funny
toes.
Though, because, yeah. Do you know what though? Like, as you say, you expect him to go out. I think when you go out on loan and you have as bad a time as he had, it's actually sometimes a good thing.
Quite
and you come
them.
Back, you come back to Brighton and suddenly you're a familiar face. You know what the whole work ethic is. You know what the plan is, and you can fit back into it very easily. And you have even more motivation to do that. And by all accounts, like, I spoke to someone that covers Brighton recently, and he said it just feels like with Duffy that he just realizes that, like, from reflecting on what happened at Celtic, what a good opportunity this is for him. And like, everybody knew what he was capable of, and it was just about getting back there. I definitely didn't expect him to be talking about him here today, but I think he definitely deserves to be in the list. Particularly when you look at Brighton's start to the season. We talked about small margins that were in place for Brighton last season between having a poor season and a good season. And you look at the kind of character that it takes within a team to have a good season. And look, when they lost Ben White, I think a lot of people thought they'd go out and spend £30 million on a centre back. But you know, they were pretty certain. Graham Potter said all along, like, I'm not buying a centre back. We're looking for a striker. And didn't totally believe him at the time, but I saw him repeat that recently, actually. He said, no, we genuinely never looked at one. And maybe this is why.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty consistent throughout preseason as well. His comments were like, Shane Duffy started preseason really well. Shane Duffy's impressing in preseason. He's looking really good. He's come in. He looks familiar. He looks happy. So you can't call Graham Potter a liar, can you? Because he said it all along and then he was true to his word and then he repeated it later. But yeah, Ben White left. I think we all probably thought, well, going to have to buy someone else. And it's Duffy that's kind of stepped into this scenario, and Brighton have started amazingly. You know, they got 4 wins out of their first 5 games in the Premier League and they're up there mixing it, rubbing shoulders with Chelsea and United and Liverpool. And I get, again, just to bring it back to the really surprising point here is that Shane Duffy is not a particularly enterprising passing centre-back. And Brighton are built on slow build-up from the back. They're built on building moves with chaining together passes in a very kind of like Guardiola, Tuchel kind of way. That's exactly who Potter takes his influences from. And it just never really felt like Duffy was that kind of centre-back. And look, we're not saying that he's now slinging 50-yard Van Dijk switch balls or he's punching passes through the line in the way that someone like Eric Garcia does for Barcelona. He's still, you know, 5-10 yards, but it's high-volume stuff. He's handling the ball like twice as often as he has ever done in his career to date with any club, with any team, with any manager. He's you know, he's playing 50, 60 passes a game. You know, in his prime under Chris Hughton, he was playing 30. He had a loan spell at Yeovil where it dipped to 25. You know, we're talking about a very different role here. Even if it's just high volume, short distance, I just didn't think Duffy was going to be able to slot into this system ever again. And no. I was wrong.
Yeah, we were all wrong. And long may continue. Long may continue. And long may continue scoring goals, winning penalties. And taking that form onto the international stage, because I said he's always better. So that means that when he goes onto the international stage, he's basically going to be prime Ronald Araujo, which is great news for Ireland in a time where there isn't much else going on. Right, let's go on to number two, Sam.
Number two is Thomas Lemar at Atletico Madrid, attacking midfielder, and this is a 9 out of 10 on the shock scale. It's been a long time coming, Thomas Lemar. But he might just have an actual role at Atletico Madrid. Can you believe it? An actual role designed for him that he can fit into. I'm shocked by this, genuinely. He just feels like he's been such an afterthought for so long and such an awkward fit for Simeone for so long, despite costing so much money and obviously having so much talent. But, you know, Simeone's now using a 3-5-2 very regularly. That's got 3 centre mids. Koke is the one holding. De Paul is the one that's playing on the right-sided number 8 spot. And Thomas Lemar has been the best option that Simeone has used this season as the left-sided number 8. He's been really, really good. And I think this is a nice convergence of potential roles for him. I think he's ended up falling into a position that kind of suits him because growing up, he was a 10. I think he had his heart set on being a central player, a number 10. But he spent the major first portion of his senior career on the left flank in Monaco's 4-4-2. He played on the left. And Bernardo Silva played on the right in that wonderful Leo Jardim side that won the title in 2017, I think. And Mbappe was up top with Falcao. Whoa, what a team. But he's kind of merging that left-sided role with a number 10 role and playing as the kind of left-sided number 8, playing in the half space. He's moving and drifting wide, linking with the left wing back quite a lot. He's pushing into the box. He started making a telling contribution on the score sheet as well. He's scoring important goals, and they've rotated their team quite a lot, Atletico, over the first stages of the season. The team is never the same. And, you know, it's an absolute toss-up as to whether De Paul will play, Lemar will play, Trippier will play. I think Simeone's done a bit too much dropping players after good performances, to be honest with you. But if there's one player I could pick out that I think, oh, you really miss him today, it's Lemar or De Paul. It's one of those two. And Lemar's the one I think that's just like, you should have played him today. Like, I think he's gone beyond, oh, let's give him a game, see what happens. I think he's really important now.
Yeah, I agree. And actually spent quite a lot of time thinking about this Atleti side recently. And I think what's kind of important to look at is that when they haven't played him, they feel much less like a side that can get things done. And look, you only need to see what happened against Espanyol, right? Where Lamar came on, and not only did he score the 99th minute equaliser, which is nuts, frankly, but also they just lacked that cutting edge without him. And I think we saw, obviously, at the weekend against Athletic as well, the fact that, you know, you're looking at good players in these roles. We're talking about Rodrigo de Paul and Marcus Llorente, who played in there in front of Kondogbia at the base. And they just suddenly didn't have the same effect that I think that they probably would have hoped to. And look, that's not taking away from Llorente. He was so good last season. You know, we had him pinned as player of the year in Spain, in La Liga. And Rodrigo de Paul, as you say, is a serious talent. But I do feel like when Llorente isn't on the right-hand side, when he isn't playing as almost the wing-back in that Trippier role, and it's not been De Paul and Lamar in front of whoever that holding midfielder is going to be, whether that's Koke, whether that's Kondogbia, it doesn't really matter. When those two aren't playing as the kind of eights in this system, it feels like Atleti really, really lack drive. And they've got this kind of strange mix going on at the moment where I think he's obviously trying to work out exactly how he plays. Simeone is trying to put in, you know, a wealth of attacking talent into a lot of slots. But also the fact that this rotation has been so visceral, if you will, and you mentioned it there, Sam, feels like he's not allowing them to build any momentum whatsoever. And I think the person who suffered from that most is probably Lamar, despite the fact that he's probably been Atleti's best player to start the season.
Yeah, it does irritate me that Simeone has been rotating to such a degree. Now, maybe it's just like fitness niggles and he has to do it, but I've seen a few players here like De Paul, Lamar, Trippier in particular. All three of those have been dropped and on the bench for the following game, despite playing really, really well. And yeah, I think there's a lack of rhythm to them. And the Espanyol game in particular, you know, Lamar steps onto the pitch with 20 minutes to go or something like that, just starts cutting them open left and right. Like, he just, that goal was coming. It's great that he scored it, but if it wasn't him, he was going to create it because he was punishing them. And that kind of impact is finally starting to come through. This man cost like 60 million euros or something like that. He cost a lot of money because he was a big talent. And he's been a bit of a disaster for the first 2-3 years of his Atleti career. It's not all his fault. We know that there's a long trail of creative players who Simeone simply hasn't utilised to their full effect. And so it warms my heart a little bit just to see him finally coming to the fore. And it feels like he's got his hooks into a position now and a role that he can really make his own and become a really impactful player. And you know, despite the fact that they've signed Cunha and Griezmann, it might be a player they've had all along that ends up actually sort of just tipping the balance for them, which is a nice little story.
Well, also, I mean, you get to that point. He's nearly made now as many appearances for Atleti as he did for Monaco, right? Which is mad because he was so key for that Monaco side. Mm. And then suddenly he went to Atleti and he didn't feel like he was that key, but he made 43 appearances in his first year, 29 the year after, 36 last year. In those 3 years, he scored 5 goals. 5 goals from Thomas Lamar in 108 appearances? Yeah. That's not right. That's,
I mean, presumably
weird.
A lot of these are sub appearances and stuff. But
sure,
it's,
sure.
Yeah, it's like, in and out. You know, but
his impact just didn't really seem to add up to what the talent we knew. Now, that's not me saying that I think he's going to be a 15-goal player this season. I still think even from this number 8 role, he's not going to reach those kind of numbers. But I do think he will be directly involved in a lot more. And I can imagine over the course of this year, Tom Lamar will double his Atleti goal tally at the very least. If he's given the time to bed into this side, if he's not rotated constantly. I really do think that. I mean, it's not that big a shout. He's got 5 in the last 3 years. He's got 1 so far this year. 4 more over the course of this season, and he's there in all comps. I reckon we'll see it. But
we should see it.
It does feel like a moment of clarity that has taken its time to come.
I think so, yeah, absolutely. And I'm delighted for him. This is a proper 9 out of 10, this one. Thomas Lamar just sort of stepping forward and going, oh, by the way, guys, I'm awesome. And you're like, oh.
I'm a really good 8. What?
I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Fair enough. That's new. Cool. Right, let's go to number 1 then.
Yeah, number 1 is Trevor Chalobah, centre-back for Chelsea. And I say this even as someone who has repped Chalobah through his youth days at Chelsea, through the UEFA Youth League and the FA Youth Cups, and someone who really did know what he was capable of. I am stunned that he is now a first team member at Chelsea. This is a 10 out of 10. Again, You take the concept, you travel back in time and tell me in June that Trevor Chalobah is not only part of the Chelsea team, but he starts the European Super Cup final and he wins it. And then he starts the first Premier League game of the season, having won Thomas Tuchel over, and he scores in it and he drops to his knees and looks to be crying, to be honest with you. He's overcome with emotion. You know, all of the summer we were looking at, you know, are Chelsea going to sign Jules Koundé? You know, they're going for him. They've got personal terms agreed. They want Jules Koundé. They want to take this squad to another level. Chelsea's track record in this area, I know there's a bit of a difference with the Frank Lampard era, but their general track record here is, let's go and buy the 80 million centre-back. Let's up the level of this squad a little bit more. Nothing pointed to this happening. And yet Chalobah is, you know, he's one of the centre-backs for Chelsea. And I suspect, actually, before Saul was signed on loan on deadline day, that he was probably centre midfielder number four, because that's what he did so well on loan at Ligue 1 as well. I mean, so well, he's definitely a centre-back, but he's got first-team experience at centre-mid as well. And I was like, oh, so he's like centre-back number five or six and probably centre-mid number four. Now, it's not a particularly glamorous role, but he's already put together a few appearances. He's got some minutes. He's already scored a goal. He's part of this team. And I think this is probably the biggest shock on this list because of Chelsea's track record, not because of Chalobah, and not really a reflection on Tuchel. But this wasn't meant to happen. Like, they were meant to sign Jules Koundé. And Trevor Chalobah, what happens to him then?
Yeah, it's a strange one. I mean, Dean, you were all over that Koundé deal and the way that it all kind of panned out and how it, you know, felt like it was going to happen. And then Zuma left and then suddenly it was all going and then it wasn't going and all of that. Has Chalobah's emergence played a part in that? Or is it just the fact that Chelsea weren't able to agree terms?
It was just that they didn't agree to sign him. They were still going after Koundé, despite Chalobah making himself part of the plans. They had been open to letting Chalobah go on loan, like that had been the plan in pre-season, but he was so good against Villarreal and Crystal Palace, was it? That Tuchel made the decision that he didn't want to let him go. Like, he wants to give people an opportunity to thrive when they show that they're up to reaching the standard, and that's what he did. But Koundé is more of a long-term vision signing. Basically, they're worried that Rudiger's going to leave. It's a huge concern at the moment. They're trying to negotiate a contract with Rudiger, and there's no breakthrough, and it's starting, to be honest, to look like Rudiger wants to leave, partially because he knows that there are clubs out there who would pay him a lot more money than Chelsea are, partly because he's always been open to playing in other leagues. But also, I think he's shown his worth, Rudiger, and I think he feels that he's worth 200,000 upwards, and he wants Chelsea to recognise that. But if they do let him go, then they'll get Koundé. But then also, Chalobah does now get the year that Koundé is not there to push himself further into Tuchel's vision, because every single day he's there at training, seeing what he's capable of. So even if he's not in the starting lineup, it doesn't matter too much, because that's what Tuchel's got his eye on now, and that's what Chelsea have their eye on. It's always what's next, what's next? What happens when we lose this player? What happens if he gets injured? And Chalobah's, you know, he's definitely emerged at a time when you didn't think there was any scope for a player like him in there, that you thought they were just going to go for elite talent that was proven that they had the caliber to go in there. But that's not the case with him. He's a guy that's just taken his chance.
Yeah, even going back to pre-season, like early pre-season for Chelsea, when they were going through, no disrespect, for like the bottom rungs of the squad, where they're looking at, they're cycling in youth players and stuff like that for pre-season games. You got like Dujon Sterling was playing right centre back in the back three with Callum Hudson-Odoi at right wing back. I remember we're talking about that on one of our, you know, pre-season notebooks on our Patreon show. Interesting little twist here. Dujon Sterling, academy product, you know, he's getting a look in at right centre back, might be one to watch. There wasn't even like the slightest hint in pre-season, early pre-season, where these kind of players get a little look in that this was going to happen. Which is why it's part of why it's kind of floored me so heavily, but part of why I love it so much as well.
Is there a case here to just suggest that Chalobah will rotate in for games that Tuchel sees as less strenuous, shall we say? You know, obviously he's played 90 minutes against Crystal Palace. He played 90 minutes against Aston Villa. He was benched for Arsenal. He played 2 minutes against Liverpool and benched for Spurs, and obviously didn't feature in the Champions League against Zenit. Is this just a case now that, and this isn't a dig, and it's not even a particular criticism, is it that Chalaba gets his look-ins here in games that he can feel comfortable in? And in fact, it's probably a pretty good management to get those look-ins in games that he feels comfortable in playing in and build him up to featuring in bigger games across the course of the season.
I think so, yeah. I mean, you either pick the easier matchups, no disrespect to whichever opponent it is, or it's the game that you play 2.5 days after the really tough Champions League game because the TV schedules let you down or whatever it is they come up with.
Yeah.
Or it's, you know, a lot of home games where he's got the comfort of the home crowd and the support and those nice surroundings to make sure that he can actually bed in and play in a team with great expectation on their shoulders. There's no doubt about that. So, yeah, I mean, it's a luxurious position to be in if you're Thomas Tuchel. He has 6 players that he can play at centre-back. He plays a game every 3 days. He has 6 players to fit into 3 positions. It's what you want.
And, nice problem to have.
And one of them is an academy prospect that the home crowd absolutely adore and love.
Yes, good. Excellent. Well, shouts out to the second best Chalaba in Southwest London. only credit where it's due. Big Nat having his moment at Fulham as well. Right after the break, we will be looking at, of course, the Medal of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Stick with us. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for my favourite part of the week. And I don't know what we're going to do about this for the next couple of weeks, Dean. I might have to get you to voice note them in. Obviously, no one else is allowed to choose the melon, which is...
We could do that.
Yeah. You might have to just voice note them in for us.
Yeah, I'll just spot melons around California and just tell you about things that I've seen people doing that are silly. Maybe.
Absolutely.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is... Lazio goalkeeper Thomas Strakosha. He had an absolute nightmare. And thank you for everyone that brought it to our attention. I didn't see it live, but it didn't take too long for the DMs and the mentions to start coming through to us saying, here you go, here's a melon. Yeah, it really was. So Europa League game, Lazio were playing at Galatasaray. Gala were looking to take the lead and basically just flung a hopeful cross into the box. Lazio fullback Manuel Lazzari, well, it wasn't great what he did, to be honest. He kind of tries to clear it, I guess, but loops it up in the air and then towards his own goal. So he's suddenly given his goalkeeper some work to do. And as it slices and comes down from the air, basically Strakosha's just got to catch it or push it away. He kind of leaps and just pushes it into the goal. I don't even know how to describe what he does, but he makes an absolute mess of it. He's distraught. He's absolutely distraught. I do feel sorry for him a bit, giving him this, because you could see how much it hurt him, the mistake that he's made. The Galatasaray fans obviously going mad because they are nuts anyway. So they're going crazy. As if that wasn't bad enough, it was the only goal of the game. It's a disaster, really. And ultimately, it's just melonish behaviour from a goalkeeper.
It is. Did you see some nice things from the Lazio fans? I mean, famously, the Lazio fans have their issues. they unveiled a banner. They're good at banners, actually. Lazio. I remember once talking about the fact that they unveiled one for Francesco Totti when he retired. Obviously, the eternal enemies, and they wrote on the banner "Love and respect from your eternal enemies." And I was like, "Excellent, that's good,
fine.
Good vibes."
Yeah, nice.
This one, they put out a banner in the warm up for the game this weekend. Obviously, Strakosha didn't play. Pepe Reina was back in goal as he usually is. In terms of who starts for Lazio in goal in the league, but the Lazio fan base unveiled a banner that is a quote from Dante's Divine Comedy. It just says, "Don't care about them, just look and go on." And Strakosha, and it had his name on it. It was nice. And then Strakosha burst into tears and had a bit of a moment. And he's, you know, he came through the Lazio Academy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
He's a homegrown player.
He is, yeah.
He's obviously, you know, someone who takes it all very, very much to heart. And so for them to unveil a banner like that, I thought was a real nice touch.
I know. And it is hard. Like, when you do Melon of the Week, like, genuinely, like, for that guy, it's one of the worst moments of his life. So that's the problem, Melon. I really don't want to like make fun of it too much, because it is it's awful. Like, we've all made mistakes in 5-a-side or 11-a-side. You've missed a penalty, whatever it is. And you know how it feels just in that moment. And you feel like it's the worst thing ever. And really, for most of us, it's not. But for him right there in the Europa League, given a chance, the club you've come through, like, must have been devastated. But the fact is, it was a Melenish thing to do because it was quite a simple catch.
Yeah, there you have it. It was.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, Thomas, but unfortunately, you are Melon of the Week. The nice thing is that you got a nice thing from your fans, which matters a whole lot more than what Dean actually gives you in terms of melons. And right with that, it's the gibberish siren. It means it's time for the gibberish rankings.
Yeah, Dean's on it again this week. Just kidding. Don't worry, Dean. I didn't send you a message. I stepped up again this week.
It will be gibberish because there's nothing here.
Yeah. This week, I have decided to rank my top 3 flavors of Pringles. Now, I would like to be able to move into the food game more often on these, but there's such a cultural disconnect in terms of brands and different types of food across the world that I feel like some of them are quite hard because a lot of the audience wouldn't know what we're talking about.
This but is Pringles, get a visceral reaction, mate.
Pringles is a universal language, right? We all speak Pringles.
We'll find out very shortly.
Yeah, we'll
Pringles
know.
Is a universal language.
You already look angry.
I'm petrified that you're not going to put the right flavor at the top of this, and there could be war here. This could be it. This could be what actually breaks Ranks FC.
The big schism.
The big Pringle rankings of 2021 were actually where it all started to go wrong. Back at this in years when they're looking back at our careers and be like, that's where it all went Pete Tong for Ranks FC Sam started ranking Pringle flavors.
On the eve of our 1-year anniversary, I've disbanded the podcast.
Right, go on, let's have it.
Let's have it. At number 3, I have placed Ready Salted for one main reason. I love salt. I love it so much. I think it's absolutely amazing.
No one's ever put Ready Salted crisps in the top 3 flavors of anything ever.
They can actually go in here. I agree with Sam. I actually,
they're so good.
They would
they're
definitely
so,
be in my top 3.
Moorish.
They are so salty. They are so salty.
And if you love salt, my God,
I love salt.
There have been times I've just licked them. I've just licked them and thrown away the crisp.
Guys, I get told off at home all the time by Rach for putting too much salt on the dinner, too much salt on chips or whatever. We've got very different tolerance levels.
Yeah, I have this argument with Lucy a lot. It's her that puts too much salt on.
Yeah, so you're a wimp. I promise you it's good stuff. Although I heard a rumor the other day, salt's bad for you.
Yeah, it's bad for you. I don't mind it. I don't mind it in certain things. We're like, we have making fajitas the other day. At least we took salt on them. I'm like, what is she doing? You don't need salt on fajitas, you lunatic.
I do agree with that. I don't think I do that. Surely it's in the spice mix anyway. So
yeah. And also I was making a soy sauce kind of noodle and rice dish. I was like, you don't need salt in this. Soy sauce is basically liquid salt. there's no need to put more salt in a soy sauce based dish. But alas, right, I appreciate your love of salt. I also like salt, but yeah. I don't think I've ever put Ready Salted in any top flavors list, but I'll accept it and move on.
Okay. Number 2 is sour cream and onion.
Mm-hmm.
Bit stinky, very Moorish, well worth the price paid. I've learned over the years that my taste buds and my palates, obviously everyone's is different, but I must be attracted to these kind of like strong, sharp flavors because I love salt. I love black coffee, like those like ridiculous dried out porcini mushrooms, like not mixed together, obviously, individually.
This is going to be a hell of a cocktail.
No, not together. And sour cream and onion, really powerful taste. A lot of people don't like it. I'm sure it puts a few people off, but not me. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I think you can appreciate this. I think they're the most, they're commonly liked, I would say, Pringles flavor.
I think people would like more. I think they're not on this list. Salt and vinegar, I think people like that more.
So salt and vinegar Pringles are the best thing of all time ever. Like, I'm not just talking about Pringles flavors. I'm talking about like full stop. If I could only eat one thing and it wasn't like about nutrition, et cetera, for the rest of my life, it would be salt and vinegar Pringles. That's where I'm at.
I am not that big a fan of the vinegar element.
Oh, I love salt and vinegar.
Love salt
and vinegar, anything. Salt and vinegar, anything. But Pringles in particular are so far and away the best salt and vinegar things, apart from those little chipstick kind of.
They're well nice too.
But salt and vinegar Pringles are the best type of salt and vinegar crisps, and I'm a salt and vinegar crisp fiend.
See, this is where Rach gets her revenge, because when we get fish and chips from the chip shop, she'd take a bath of vinegar if it wasn't extremely bad for you. Like, she douses the things in it. And I do struggle a little bit with that volume of vinegar. So you're right. It's a very, 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 very genuine salt and vinegar flavor in the Pringles. And that's why actually they're not quite for me, because that vinegar element isn't good. What I've put at number one is another salt-based Pringle. It's the salt and pepper Pringles.
Oh, this is the grey tin.
I haven't had that.
Which a lot of people won't have had. Find. And I haven't made them up. You know,
no, they're real. They're real. They've got a grey can.
Yeah, it's like a silvery grey tube. I've seen them in supermarkets in the UK twice in 5 years. I always look, they're almost never there. Go on Amazon, try and buy them. You can't, they're out of stock, right? Go on eBay. You're paying a seriously inflated price. Obviously, it depends on supply and demand, but you can get one can on there for a fiver. Sometimes one can is a tenner. And I saw a deal on eBay earlier, three tubes for $30. I mean...
Did you do it?
No, God, no. The price of these alone speaks... It tells you how premium these are. And let me tell you, it's like the Moorishness of that ready salted times two. They're so, so good. They are so good. I absolutely adore them. And part of it is because they're so rare. I can't find them.
Yeah, that's what I mean. What you've done there is you've allowed rarity to come into the mix. If they were available every week, you wouldn't have them more often than the other two, I don't think.
I'd have them more often than ready salted, because it'd be salt and pepper.
Maybe. I think barbecue would still be my number one, though.
I think salt and vinegar for me, one. Then probably, smoky barbecue.
Nah, they're not that good.
And then maybe paprika. I actually really like paprika.
They're pretty good.
They're pretty good. I had a look on the Pringles official website, by the way, just looking at all the other flavors. In the US, as usual, they are treated to so much more than us. We have about 6 or 7 baseline flavors. You've got the three I've talked about, two of them. You've got barbecue, you've got salt and vinegar, you've got prawn cocktail, cheese and onion, I think, is one of them as well.
And paprika, yeah.
And paprika. I look on that Pringles website. Ranch, rotisserie chicken, parmesan and garlic, buffalo ranch, Wendy's spiced chicken, mushroom and cream. Please,
Buffalo ranch. Dean, can you bring them back?
I was just thinking, do you reckon they'll survive the flight?
They're in a nice metal tube. They're flightproof.
Yeah, they should be flight. Okay, I'll bring some back.
Can you bring me back a buffalo ranch? I don't really mind about buffalo the rest ranch. Of them, but I really would like a buffalo ranch.
We want those. And also, I don't want you to bring them back because I'm scared of it, but can someone out there please tell me if the mushroom and cream ones, one, are real? And two, are they as bad as they sound, despite the fact that I really like mushrooms and cream?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever walked into a shop and be like, do you know what this needs? Mushroom and cream crisps. It's a bit like when Walkers decided they were going to do like tomato ketchup flavored crisps. I was like, no one wants this, man. No one is that interested in. And they're now doing takeaway flavored crisps. Now, don't get me wrong, like a Sensations with like a Thai sweet chili. But like if you're talking, you know, a fish and chips, I'm like, there was one that's just salt and vinegar, isn't it? But worse. And it just, they're doing a lot of different things at the moment in terms of trying to make takeaway flavored crisps. And I'm just like, look, man, crisps should stay as crisps. That's as far as it goes, as far as I'm concerned. We don't need ketchup flavored ones. Basically, just salt and vinegar, to be honest. And then I'll be fine. That's all we got. Right. That's about all I think we've got time for. Thank you very much, Sam, for that gibberish. Thank you very much for your main ranking. All that's really left for me to do is say thank you and goodbye for a while to Mr. Dean Jones.
Bye. See ya.
Have a nice trip, DJ.
Bring back some crisps.
Bring back some crisps. Bring back some ranch sauce for us. Say hello to the rank squad out there, and we expect you to send us in some Melon of the Week contenders as voice notes.
Okay. Maybe text me to remind me.
I will.
All these things.
I hope the flight isn't too bad in terms of the kids.
Maybe the Melon of the Week will be me for taking kids to California on a 12-hour flight, whatever it is.
I think it might be. Thank you very much, Sam Tai.
Yeah, cheers, buddy. Dino, enjoy CPK. Enjoy your holiday.
Oh, yeah.
I'll see you next week, Sam. We'll have some guests. It's all very exciting. We're going to have some special friends on while Dean's away to try and spice things up a little bit while we're down to two. And I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Ranks FC podcast. Thank you so much, as ever, for listening. And we will see you next week, or, of course, on Friday and Monday if you're part of our Ultras community on Patreon. We do promise you it's great fun over there. And we'll be continuing to put out two extra episodes a week all the way through this season. Thanks for listening. Take it easy. Peace. Final seconds of the game. A chance to score, and the chance has gone begging. If your business's commerce platform keeps missing the target on golden opportunities, get the MVP you deserve. Get Shopify. Shopify is the commerce platform revolutionizing millions of businesses worldwide. Whether you're a garage entrepreneur or IPO ready, Shopify is the only tool that you need to start, run, and grow your business without the struggle. Shopify puts you in control of every sales channel. So whether you're selling signed football boots from Shopify's in-person POS system, or you're vending vintage shirts on Shopify's all-in-one e-commerce platform, you are covered. And once you've reached your audience, Shopify has the internet's best converting checkout to help you turn them from browsers to buyers. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is truly a global force, powering Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across over 170 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ranks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ranks to take your business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/ranks.